and thank you for joining us for Cholangio Heroes, a video podcast produced by the Cholangiocarcinoma Foundation. I'm Jennifer Weaver. I'm the Director of Communications, and I will serve as the host for this episode, which I'm excited and thrilled to be introducing a special guest who is a world-renowned physician, Dr. Mitesh Borad. He serves as the chair for the International Cholangiocarcinoma Research Network, ICRN, and I'm going to actually turn it over to him to also share with you a little bit of his background and his connection to the disease cholangiocarcinoma.
Okay, well, thank you, Jennifer. It's a pleasure to be here with everyone today, and I really commend the foundation for arranging this podcast and for inviting me today. My personal connection to the disease is I was involved in genomic sequencing research about 15 years ago, and where we started seeing a lot of promise was cholangiocarcinoma. So I just pursued that thread, and here I am today. I am fully committed to working with patients, which I've enjoyed very much all these years. It's been 15 years later now, and we've made a lot of advances in just the last 5 years, and I'm committed to staying on board until we find a cure.
And I'm sure we will with your expertise and how dedicated you are. But you mentioned that you've had your hands in advancing treatments for the disease. Can you share some of the advances we've had in recent years?
Yeah, the last 5 or 6 years have been particularly exciting. There are already a number of FDA-approved targeted therapies now, which we did not have widely available, just a few years ago. So these are things like pemigatinib and infigratinib, which target a protein called FGFR2, which is abnormal in a subset of patients with cholangiocarcinoma. About 10% or so of patients have this abnormality. And then you have IDH1, which is another protein which is abnormal or mutated, again, in about 10 to 15% of patients. And there's a drug called ivosidenib, which is also FDA approved. And most recently, we saw a big advance in immunotherapy, which had made its way in many other cancers. But while we had seen some signals in cholangiocarcinoma and other biliary tract cancers like gallbladder cancer, we had not had a positive study that would propel them when data was presented from the TOPAZ-1 study, which used an immunotherapy called durvalumab. So we're waiting on formal assessment of this drug, and hopefully it will also get approval in the U.S. and other parts of the world and can be widely used and made available to patients.
You had mentioned that you have a strong background in the genomic sequencing. How does that play into treatment options?
Yeah. So in the past, the only assessments we would do is just to get a tissue sample and say, is this tumor cholangiocarcinoma? Or is it, say, a colon cancer that went to the liver or a breast cancer that went to the liver? So we would try to figure out what it is with pathological assessment. But that was never going to provide the full picture. That was just using the microscope and stains to make those calls. What we have seen, again, in just the last 15 or so years is what we would call the genomic revolution, where we can analyze every patient's cancer genomically, genetically, to see what is wrong in their cancer at an individual level and try to tailor their treatment based on that. So those advances have been done in many cancers like lung cancer and colon cancer and other common cancers. But it looks like cholangiocarcinoma in particular will have a lot of applicability. Over half of the patients who are analyzed will have one target or the other that could be used even today.
That is amazing. I'm wondering, we advocate for people to get biomarker testing. What is the difference between the biomarkers and the genomic sequencing that you were talking about?
Yeah. So initially, the genomic sequencing was looking at as many things as possible. So we have about 25,000 genes, which will also be the same number of genes that will be in the tumor. And after initial extensive work, a narrower list was found that you find more commonly in cholangiocarcinoma. So these would be what we would call biomarkers, where you would look for the things that you have a high likelihood of finding. And if you do find them, is there something you can do about them? You know, and that's where these drugs that are already FDA approved come into play, and drugs that are in development and hopefully will join the ones that we already have come into play.
What is coming our way? What do you see as the future for cholangiocarcinoma?
Well, we call this cancer the most target-rich gastrointestinal cancer because, as I mentioned, at least half of the patients have something that for which there may be a drug you can already use widely or that may have been used in other cancers, and you may have an opportunity to, you know, try to get it through other means, whether it's a clinical trial, off-label use, single patient INDs, as we call them, for, you know, a clinical trial for an individual patient. But we need to know what's wrong with the tumor to be able to pursue any of these avenues. So things like BRAF is another protein one would look for, KRAS, the G12C variant, which there's drugs now available in lung cancer, for example, MET, M-E-T, this is something that abnormal in lung cancer, but is also abnormal here in about 1% of patients. So again, these things that are otherwise uncommon, but collectively form a pretty decent portion of targetable events, is something we would want to look for. So no patient should really be diagnosed with cholangiocarcinoma and not get analysis done.
Oh, that's wonderful. Do you have any studies that you're working on you'd be willing to share with us?
Yeah, I wanted to mention an initiative called C2T2 or C2T2. So cholangiocarcinoma is an uncommon cancer, not rare. I mean, you know, the number of cases is not less than 100, but it's not in the hundreds of thousands either. So we consider this to be an uncommon cancer. So any one center or any one physician may see a fair number of cases, but not enough to really drive changes in the field. And if we want to create the evidence through which drugs can eventually get approved or people can feel confident in using them, it was quickly realized we would need to work together. And that would be the only way forward. By not doing it, we were not going to be able to make advances. So ICRN, the International Cholangiocarcinoma Research Network, recently organized a think tank, Cholangiocarcinoma Think Tank, so hence the name C2T2. And one of the things that came out of this think tank, which lasted 2 days and had experts from all over the world come in different areas, surgery, oncology, genetic sequencing, data analysis, et cetera. One of the things that came out was that we will need to launch a platform study where we can study these patients that have these rare targets in an uncommon cancer. So we're hoping that this initiative will realize into reality in the not too distant future and somewhere where we can actually look at all of these things all under one umbrella. So we're really excited from all the discussions and look forward to the developments working with everybody.
Yeah, it's really clever to name it C2T2. I think that's really, really clever. I was actually there for those 2 days and I was really, really impressed with the collaboration. I've never seen anything like that. But what was really interesting is that it wasn't just talked about as far as how do we treat the disease. Everybody was really on board of how do we get ahead of that with early detection. And I was wondering, do you have any information that you can share of where that research may be going? Is there any means out there to look at even some maybe precautionary things that people can do?
Yeah, so early detection is perhaps one of the holy grails in management of cancer, finding it very early so that you have a chance at a cure, surgeries, and other modalities. Of course, with this being an uncommon cancer for the population at large, it will probably make more sense to do early detection in a sort of pan-cancer or all-cancer approach rather than just cholangiocarcinoma. So yeah, you want to have a test that can find anything, right? Pancreatic cancer, lung cancer, breast cancer, all in a single test or a few tests at the most. However, there may be certain groups that are at higher risk where perhaps cholangiocarcinoma and other biliary tract cancers can be studied individually. And that group was identified as being patients with PSC, primary sclerosing cholangitis, which is an autoimmune condition that's also uncommon, but has a very high risk of developing these kinds of cancers, 25 to 30% over a person's lifetime. So right now, people, if they even do that, do just scans to see is the cancer developing or not. But maybe through these types of liquid biopsy, blood test, or other measures, people will be able to see it when it's very, very small and can actually detect it early, as would be the goal.
It's amazing what you're saying, because it really lets patients and even their families know that they're a priority, that there is a lot of emphasis right now in the cholangiocarcinoma landscape. So I was just wondering if you would share just some words that would still instill hope, because I know a lot of people, when they're diagnosed, they go right to Google and all they see is the poor prognosis. But everything that you've shared with us in this podcast really gives reason to be optimistic. So what do you say to your patients? What do you do to keep them with a positive attitude through such a grim diagnosis?
Yeah, those are very good points that you brought up. Much of the information that's available widely right now, one has to remember, is historical, and the field is changing rapidly. So it doesn't make sense to read historical information and pretty much determine your own fate, because it may not really apply given how fast changes are occurring. The second thing I tell patients is that everybody's outcome is different. You know, you have averages and then you have outliers, and the number of outliers is increasing every day. So if the only way to be an outlier is to try things. So if you don't try and you give up hope, you already lost the battle. So the key thing is to remember that there's a chance. It's becoming a pretty good chance as time goes by, and hopefully everybody gets that chance. There's no such thing as outliers, but until we're there, the best way to keep up hope is to remember that there are a growing number of outliers.
And on that note, how else would somebody who has been diagnosed really collaborate with their care team? Do you have any advice on once they say, okay, I'm giving it my all, I'm going to try, like you mentioned, do you have any tips to help them work with their providers?
As folks mentioned, the people who are going to be most successful in these endeavors are folks who take ownership of their care to some degree and partner with their care team to get the best outcome. I think this is becoming more and more common all across the country and globally, that we have multidisciplinary teams that care for patients. So it's not really just one physician, it's a number of physicians handling different aspects. And more importantly, all the other people who do all the critical work, the nursing team, the pharmacy team, social work, people who help even schedule things, these are all very critical in their care. And working with that team closely is going to lead to the highest chance of success. The other thing I would advise patients is to not be shy about obtaining a second opinion, even if they are with somebody who sees a lot of patients and is considered an expert. So I tell my patients to definitely go and seek other opinions, because there are only so many things a single individual is going to know. And their odds are going to be highest if they garner opportunities from wherever they may be, especially if they're able to travel or have family in other areas where other things are being pursued.
So that's great advice for patients. And I'm wondering what advice you would give for diagnosing physicians. A lot of people that watch or listen to our video podcast and Audible podcast are with Frontliners TV. So these are the people on the front lines, the nurses and some other physicians. So what would you say to them?
Well, there's many different messages we could convey, but it's easiest to have like a few messages. So one of the messages I would convey is if you see a tumor in the liver and the biopsy says adenocarcinoma, or if it's not a hepatocellular cancer, and again, it's an adenocarcinoma, you don't see anything anywhere else, you don't have to look anywhere else, you found the primary tumor. It's in the liver, it's not an unknown primary at that stage, it's a cholangiocarcinoma, right? So that would be the key message I would want to communicate in terms of the diagnosis. The other critical message would be getting the tissue diagnosis is not enough. Once you see something that says cholangiocarcinoma, immediately start thinking about genomic profiling. And you can do this on the tissue, you can do this on the blood, ideally both. But nobody who has this cancer, especially if they're advanced in nature, should have just a tissue diagnosis. They should have genomic profiling.
Oh, right on. I think that's the best way to end this podcast. You've addressed what has advanced in cholangiocarcinoma, what we can look to the future, advice for patients, and also advice for physicians. So thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Borad, and everybody else out there listening. Please join us next week for a new episode of Cholangio Heroes. You can also find us at cholangiocarcinoma.org. There's more information there. This podcast will also be housed on our website, as well as our YouTube channel. To make it easier, you can also go to curecc.org. It's a little bit easier to type in than cholangiocarcinoma. Anyway, thank you again, Dr. Borad.
You're welcome, and thank you for having me. Take care.